There you go.
Theme song. I'm in the car, and when I drive home, when I get home from the airport, this will have completed my 12-week journey into madness, my descent into madness, and ascent into the normal level of madness. It was a descent from madness into madness, just, you know, a different madness. Mad Men. I'm back in Colorado. 12th class completed. I made it to every class. I made it to every flight. I don't mind if I say that I think I did a pretty damn good job here. Oh my god. Stuck behind a slow bus. This is the part that I hate, which is the part where you go. So I was gone for a week, so you have to park in the like long-term scum lot. And Jesus Christ, does it suck? I mean, I think I'm gonna end up. I basically have now driven a circle around the entire lot. Because I made a bad choice of which direction I was pulling out. And it's like, not an exit. Do not enter this. Blah, blah, blah. And then, like, you get out. And then it's like, go this way. And now it's having me go all the way to the end. Then turn around and go all the way to the other end. And, like, just the whole system of, you know, you stop. You park. You wait for a bus to then take you to the airport. So what should be the last 3 minutes of your journey is 20 minutes. It's just like, I just, one of those where you're like, there's got to be a better way. Like, how is there not, there's a train that goes from downtown to here. There's a train once you get in the airport. How is there not a train from the parking here to the airport interior? Like, that's crazy, right? That doesn't make any sense. I discovered today a situation. Now, if I had to ask you a situation where, like, a sort of twee emo kid shows up and, you know, is super tiny and has skinny little pants, I'm, like, really tempted as I'm driving through here to be like, hey, how about for $5 ahead, I'll just take you to the airport right now. And then, I'll save you some time. It pays half my parking. How about it? How about it, idiot, asshole, weirdos? They probably won't go for it. If you had to come up with a situation where you're like, I'm glad to see this, like, little emo kid, you know, thank God he showed up. There's probably not a lot, right? But then I discovered it, which is when you get on the airplane. When you get on the airplane and you're sitting next to, like, this tiny, tiny emo kid, you're like, oh, this is perfect. I mean, it's, like, the most amazing way. The most amazing way to travel. Press blue button. Processing fee $72. Christ. Please insert credit card or press intercom. Credit card inserted. Remove credit card. Processing. Thank you. Amount authorized. Press button for receipt. All right, I'm out. I'm free. The little arm went up and I am now free. Free to be human again. Free to go about my life without suspicion. And then I gotta just figure out how the fuck to get out of here. Terminal, airport exit. Great. Anyway, when you get on the airplane, tiny little kid next to you, that's a great situation. That is what you want. That's who you want to sit next to. You know, fuck the fantasy of having no one next to you. I have taken 22 flights in the last 3 months. So far in this calendar year, or, you know, the year that began in January, I've taken 22 flights. And before that, I think I took 3 others in November and December. So 25 flights in the last 4 months. So I know what the fuck I'm talking about. And just like, I think in all of those flights, maybe 2, maybe 3, did I have no one in the seat next to me. One, I had the entire row to myself, which was fucking amazing. One was there. It was a row of three. It was when I was flying out this last time. And the row in front of us was totally empty. There was another totally empty row. And the guy who was sitting on the end got up and moved. And which was great because he was gigantic. So, like, I think he was kind of like, listen, he just moved. And the flight attendant was like, yeah, cool. Because if you looked at this dude, you would just be like, I mean, if somebody should be sitting in their own row, that benefits not only him, but everyone else. He was just a very big dude. So that was great. What the fuck? What the fuck? You know? It's like they have the signs for what's happening, and they're like, this lane ends. Go merge in, you know? And it's like, this lane doesn't end. You're lying to me. You've lied to me, sign that was put up here. Anyway. Don't bother wishing for the impossible. Wish for the probable, which is like, it's impossible to hope to be sat next to no one, but it is entirely possible to be sat next to someone of inconsequential size. And that's what I recommend to hope for. Pin your hopes on that. Pin your hopes on his denim jacket festooned with enamel pins. And you'll probably strike gold. So now I have my, like, stuff I gotta do to sort of get back to regular life. / look towards the future. And, you know, living where Poon Master Flex lives again. Which is what I want. You know, we've talked a little about career crisis and whatnot on here, and I think I've just decided that, like, I don't really care about my career, what it is, at this point, just because I don't really see a way for me to have a career that I will like. I just want to, like, live where Poon Master Flex lives. That's basically all I'm going for. So anyway, but we're going to kind of just take the next month easy, and then May, she'll have been out there for 6 months. So we'll kind of look at how things are going and whatever. Decide, like, what to do. Not decide to, like, break up or not. Just in case you're worried. Decide, like, should I just move out there with no job? Should she move back here? Should we just both move to fucking Arkansas? I was saying, like, you know, I was like, you know, the other possibility I've thought of, like, long term, is like, maybe I'll just move to, like, northern Wyoming or something where it's cheap as shit to live, and then I won't have to work as much. You know, and I was like, I think it's impossible to make a living as a writer, but maybe it is possible if you live in, like, you know, Missouri. I mean, if a house costs a third of what it costs somewhere else, maybe you can do it if you do it in the right place. I don't know. I don't know if that's a good plan or not. It might be a terrible plan. But, like, when we visited her parents, I gotta say, like, if I was a James Patterson type, right? And I was, like, going on book tours and shit, I'd be like, Kansas City is the place to be. You get a ton for your money there. There's not, like, people aren't going to bother you, because if you're living in a city, it just seems like you're going to run into people and stuff, whereas if you live there, it's like, I mean, eventually, won't the people at the grocery store, I think they won't be that excited. You know what I mean? They'll just be like, yeah, he just fucking comes here and buys groceries. Whatever. And then, like, they've got an international airport. It's the middle of the country, so you can get to the coasts pretty quick. I mean, I think it's probably 4 or 5 hours to the west coast, to Portland, so the northern west coast, and I bet it's, like, 3 hours to New York or something like that. And then it's cheap as shit. You could live 20 minutes from the airport, cheap as hell. You could have a nice place for not very much, you know, money. I don't know. That's the other like long-term sort of fantasy I've had is like, well, maybe you can make a living from writing if you even if you don't make much, if you kind of reduce your expenses, if you're willing to do without a lot of things, which I am. But anyway, you know, and the other side of it is I'm like, you know, I've been pretty responsible my entire life, like, you know, working and all that kind of stuff. So maybe it's time to make an irresponsible choice and go out there. But I don't know. Poonmaster Flex is very supportive. I keep, you know, I would say, like, maybe I made the wrong choice and I should have just come out here with you. And she's like, yeah, it's hard to know, though. Like, how would you know? I mean, maybe that wouldn't work. Maybe you'd still be looking for a job now. You know, she doesn't want me to come out there and be miserable. So that's good, I guess. I mean, she's pretty great. So there you go. So the workshop, was it worth it? That's the big question, right? Was it worth it? Was it worth it to, like, go and learn and whatever? Well, I'll start off with yes. I mean, I'll start off with I don't know. Because it's too recent and raw to sort of put it all together, you know, to really decide how it was. So I can't fully say, but I will say yes from this perspective. I made it. I, you know, financially I made it. I made it to the flights, you know, I made the travel. I managed okay. I think I started having sort of a mental breakdown like the last couple weeks, just because it's like the strain. It was just a lot of strain. This guy, there's a Toyota Camry driving in what looks to be a bike lane that then turned into a turn. Okay. I know this is fascinating. Pete narrates driving. I started having, you know, the breakdown. There's a thing here that's like, I mean, there's a road that just goes to the airport. There's, like, nothing out here. It's, like, kind of industrialized prairie wasteland. And there's just, like, right next to the sidewalk here, which is, I don't know, 10 feet from the road where cars are, like, zooming by, there's, like, a couple benches somebody put there, like, new metal benches. It's not a bus stop. It's just, like, a park bench. Like, someone's gonna wanna fucking sit there near the loud as shit road, cars flying by at like 60 miles an hour. I mean, of all the places in the entire world you could sit, why would you sit there? I also see they're building a sidewalk trail here, and it looks like, I can't tell exactly, but it looks like they're building it like all serpentine and shit, which I think is kind of annoying. I'm not a big fan of that. It might just be that the dirt has washed up on it. I don't like the, like, serpentine paved trail so much. Because it's just like, you'll be running around the park, and one park I go to sometimes, they paved it with this curvy pattern. And the thing that you notice is, like, jogging on it is just annoying. And, like, you'll be trying to pass somebody up, and they're just in the dead center. Because it's like, people just sort of naturally walk in the center. And especially when it curves like that, because it's like, well, okay, there, you have to, like, keep track of what you're doing to remain on one side of the path. And so then if it's, like, curving around, like, you're going to just come up on people constantly walking in the fucking dead center of the path. And there'll be two of them walking together, and you're just like, I'm just going to pass by them. And then sometimes they freak out, like, oh, you scared me, which I'm like, because I came up on you quickly. I mean, on a path that there are dozens of people that you can see right now in the middle of the day. I mean, what the fuck? Like, fuck you. Fuck you. I'm mad at them for being scared. See, I obviously haven't been so enlightened to where I'm like, whatever, man. Nothing matters. Because I'm like, fuck them. They got scared by me for no real reason. What a bunch of shits. But, yeah, so I gotta get back to, like, life, you know, gotta get some glasses, gotta get some oil changed, gotta get my fucking stitches out of my mouth tomorrow, gotta get a gym pass. My gym did this really fucking annoying thing that I know why they did it, but I'm very annoyed because it's like it's a you know, city rec center, right? So you're like, okay, I mean, it should be cheaper than it is, but it's not cheap. However, you used to basically be able to buy, I don't know, like monthly, quarterly, 6 month or a year, I think was the thing. And I could see taking one of those out, be like, I mean, maybe you just gotta get, just do quarterly, fuck the 6 month, or just do 6 month, fuck the quarterly. I get that. But now you've got two options, monthly and yearly. And I know why they do it. Because, like, in the yearly, too, they're like, you don't have to pay the entire lump sum right now. But what we do, if you do get the yearly, you can pay every month. But the way you have to do that, then, is you have to bring us, like, a canceled check. So then we have, like, all the routing numbers and shit, and we, like, directly withdraw it from your account. Which I'm like, they're telling me about this, and I'm like, I don't have a fucking check anymore. A. B, I'm not paying this, like, rent. And C, the thing that really pissed me off about it was I was like, why are your two options 1 month and 1 year? Or in other words, here are my two options. An amount, or 12 times that amount. I mean, that'd be like if you sold chicken nuggets and you're like, you can either have a one pack, and you're like, well, that's not quite enough, or a 12 pack, and you're like, that seems like a lot. Doesn't somewhere in the middle, six or something, seem like a good, who's going to eat? No one's going to eat one. Nobody's going to get like, oh, a 1 month membership. That's perfect for me. You know what I mean? Who's that perfect for? And then a 12 month membership. I mean, okay, that I understand because you know what they're doing is they're just capitalizing on the like, I'm going to sign up for a gym membership. And then, pay for it for a year and never go. And they're like, well, now we got him on the hook for a full year. It's exactly what, like, the commercial gyms do. And I guess I expected a little better from my, local recreation department. I thought they would be a little more responsible and less trickery. But that's what I get. But here's the best part of that, is actually this has worked out to my advantage so far, because I've only done this for 1 month because my thing came up and I got a new one in February, mid-February. And so then I was going and I knew it was February 13th because I had the receipt in my email and was like, well, I guess I'll have to, because I don't usually bring my fucking wallet in with me to the gym. So I was like, well, I'll have to make sure I have it with me when it expires so I can pay for the new one. And so I go in the last time, and I think I've gone in two or three times now, and there's been no one at the desk. So when you go in, you just scan your pass and then walk upstairs. And, you know, sometimes someone will look up from the computer and be like, hey. So whatever. And, like, I kind of just leave it up to them to tell me when my thing has expired. But the last, like, three times, there's been no one there, so I just scanned it and went upstairs, because I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, wait here to pay for something that I'm pretty sure I have to pay for, but I don't know? And also, like, in the past, you know, I'll get a quarterly membership, right? And one time, they were like, your thing's been expired for, like, 3 weeks, and I'm like, okay, you know, like, well, I'll pay it. Like, and, you know, they'll even say, like, we'll just get it next time, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, cool, like, whatever you want. I mean, I'm not asking or trying to sneak by or come in here for free, but I'm also like, well, I'm not going to stand around at the desk while somebody's out, like, making the basketball hoops fold up into the ceiling for, like, 10 minutes. I mean, what am I supposed to do, just wait so that I can pay money that I wouldn't have to pay? And so I got, you know, a week's worth of gym that I didn't pay for, and now I've been on vacation. I've been out of town for a week. So now I'll pay again, and then I'll be good for the entire month of April, basically. So I basically got a week for free of use, and then a week that I didn't pay for that I also didn't use, which is good. But, you know, it sort of forced me. If I thought about this before leaving, I probably would have said to myself, what you should do is just not use the gym this final week before you leave for a week, because if you pay for it now, you're going to be paying for a week that you don't use. So just do it. Just don't even go, and then do it when you come back. But it actually worked out to where I didn't even have to do that. I just like kind of continued on my normal pattern, and things worked out. So the point being, though, is like, you know, when you got me on the quarterly membership, basically I would have paid for 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks, whereas now I have not. You know, I would have paid for the last 2 weeks, so that would have been, you know, the week that I was going and didn't pay for, and then the week I wasn't here. And, like, I would get a quarterly membership. I probably would have even gotten a six-monther. But a year, I was like, that's just too much. That's ridiculous. And also, the hassle of, like, bringing in a thing and doing that, I was like, eh, fuck off. I kind of think they're doing it. There's, like, this new gym in town, this, like, big Vasa, whatever. Have a glass of Vasa. Which everyone likes, and they're like, it's cheap, but I don't know. I've been to a lot of gyms, and I don't trust anyone who's like, this is a good gym, unless it's somebody who I know uses the gym the same way I do, which is like, I don't give a fuck about classes. I don't give a fuck about a pool. I don't give a fuck about childcare. I do not care if they have like 1,000 elliptical machines. You know, here's what I want them to have: more than one squat rack, more than one bench press, more than one set of free weights. And, you know, more than one up to as many as it takes to accommodate the number of people who use that gym in a realistic fashion. That's what I want. But it seems like nobody else I know is into that or cares. Or like, you know, I went to Aspire/Inspire Fitness and they had a cardio theater. So it's like there's treadmills and there's a movie playing in there. And I was like, all right, you know, I could try this. It's fucking pitch black when you get in there, so you can't see anything. You're trying to, like, operate this treadmill, and then there's no lights on it. And then everyone's pounding away, so you can't hear shit anyway. It's so fucking loud of, like, machines in there. And then it's a closed black box where people are exercising, so you just start sweating like crazy. And, you know, I'm like, all right, well, I exercised and watched about 5 minutes of The Dark Knight, and that was horrible. It was like, I watched 5 minutes of a movie that I've seen 10 times and couldn't hear anyway. That was well worth it. You know what the cardio theater is the home gym. It's definitely a, that's like also one of my fantasy life things, is like I would have a home gym. I would love to have a home gym. Because how great would that be? You could just like use it when you want. Whenever I see someone and they have a garage, I'm like, you fool. Like, investing in some gym equipment, if you used it, I mean, you would get your money back like 10 times over within a year, I bet. Because you wouldn't have to buy everything. You just need the stuff. You just buy the stuff that you use. You know what I mean? I know like a squat rack and stuff is expensive, but like, come on. And the other thing, though, if you're going to buy or do a home gym, don't buy like a Bowflex or something. Those things don't work. Like, they break and they just whatever. I mean, I'm just telling you, by the number of them that I've seen at, like, the Habitat for Humanity Restore, I don't know if a Bowflex is a great idea. You know what I mean? Maybe start with something that makes sense for you. Something you'll actually use is a good start. I had this friend in high school who I thought was... It was pretty funny because his dad remarried or was dating someone else or something, and he was making fun of them because, like, I think they were newly engaged or married or, you know, dating or whatever. And so they were both, like, trying to, you know, keep up their fitness because that's what you do at that part. And his dad bought, like, a treadmill, and he also was tanning. They were both tanning and treadmilling. And, you know, his dad was like, well, I got this treadmill, you know, and if you think about it, it's way cheaper than a gym membership. And my friend was like, you know, you have like a lifetime free membership to the sidewalk. And I was like, that's a pretty solid burn. That is a pretty solid burn, my friend. Anyway, I don't know. I just enjoyed that. My brakes sound like crap, which I got them replaced not that long ago, and I don't feel that things went right. I feel like I'm hearing a sound that I should not be hearing. But I don't know. It's like I took it in and they were like, well, they look fine, but you know, we can replace the ones because they're like 70% of the way there. And I was like, okay. And then now they sound like shit. And I'm like, okay. What did you do? What has been done to me? What have you done? Well, that was a long, rambling non-answer to was it worth it? There's like an oversized, just bunch of huge trucks going by. Weird. There's people in the cars, too, that are like, you know, they have the car out front with the little lights on. That's just like, oversized load coming. And I'm sort of like, yeah, I mean, if I didn't see that truck coming, am I going to see you? I mean, if I don't see that truck coming, I don't know if I should be driving. Like, am I safe to be on the road if I didn't? Oh, yeah, I guess there is a huge fucking truck taking up 1.5 lanes coming my way. Huh. Fancy that. That fancy. Cat fancy. Did you know Cat Fancy has changed its name to Catster? And Dog Fancy has changed its name to Dogster. Which is like... I kind of get it, because Cat Fancy is a stupid name and like an old-timey name. I mean, oh, I do fancy the cats. You know, like... okay, and Dog Fancy. Dog Fancy never worked for me, because I was like, well, I guess if you're doing those, like, dog shows and shit, maybe. Maybe you fancy a dog, but I think most of us are like, oh yeah, that's my dog, you know, Skeeter. He smells like a fucking swamp. And, yeah. You know, he'll be carried off by an eagle someday. But, yeah, they change. I don't know that Catster is much better, because I've never heard that as like a, hey, you Catster, you know what I mean? Or like, do people use that for other shit? Is there like, you're a person who loves books and reading and you're a bookster? Like, I don't think so. So it's 4:00 and there's like work trucks now and work vans hauling ass, going like 90. It's the complete opposite of the beginning of the day, you know, when you're going and the, wow, there's a septic truck that's called the Turd Hearse. The Turd Hearse. I was thinking the other day that, you know those, just like all over the fucking place, but you know those, there's like people who do the van dwelling, live in a van and all that shit. I think a hearse would make a pretty good camping vehicle. Because, like, it would fit a bed pretty easily, right? It's probably got good storage. I bet it's got good suspension, so it's, like, meant to hold a little bit more weight. They're probably, like, well-powered and shit. I just think a hearse might be the answer. I think the answer may have been staring us in the face this whole time. Which is, like, why take a cargo van when you could just basically use a vehicle meant to store human cargo anyway? And it's still pretty much a car. And I feel like if you had the curtains drawn on it and shit, I feel like people wouldn't fuck with a hearse. You know, or like if a hearse was parked in a neighborhood, you could get away with that for a night, I think. Because it's like, okay, well, someone must have passed. And I'm not going to... What are you going to do? Make a big stink about, like, you can't park that here? And I'll be like, ma'am, I drive a hearse. I need to park it somewhere close to my retrieval spot, if you will. So anyway, Catster, Dogster. I just don't, you know, I'm not a bookster. I'm not a writester. I'm not a podcaster. I don't know. Catter? Would that be a thing? Doggos? I mean, why not just call it cats? Cats like a motherfucker or something like that. I'm also not really sure how Cat Fancy and Dog Fancy or Catster, Dogster, like, they still exist, I guess. But it's kind of like, dude, how are you not out of material yet? I mean, seriously, like, wouldn't you think that they would have covered most of the things there are to say about cats and dogs? And, like, most of what there is to know? I mean, there's not a lot to know. And, like, what there is to know, do I want it in, like, a two-page magazine format? I mean, it's like, if I'm going to get, you know, I've learned some things about, like, rescuing kittens, for example. Like, it's, you know, the thing, there's lots you have to do. There's lots involved. The more I've learned about it, the more I've been like, this is a terrible thing, and I hope I never have to do it. Like, I learned more about it from a standpoint of, like, learning CPR, which is like, this is terrifying, and I hope I never have to do this. But I guess if I do, I'll know to do something. And it's kind of like, all right, but do I really want to learn that from, like, a two-page magazine spread? I just feel like maybe, I mean, maybe they do this. Maybe Catster is, like, long-form journalism at this point. What are the ethics of the cat islands in Japan, you know, where it's like cats are just kind of breeding and running wild? Should they just let that continue? Should there be some kind of control, capture, spay, neuter kind of program that eventually over time will, you know, reduce or eliminate the cats on the island? I don't know. What are the ethics? What's the cultural significance of Cat Island?
Who knows? Nobody knows.
Anyway. That's a cat's. That's my catster dogster chunk. Pretty good, huh? Alright, so back to the big question for today's episode. Was it worth it? Like, alright, yes, it was worth it because if I'd gotten in and then didn't go, I always would have wondered. You know what I mean? I would have always wondered, like, what would have happened? And, like, what would it have been like? And how would it have gone? And so on and so forth. And, I think it's a good idea when you have something like this, if you're able to go for it. You know what I mean? Like, why not? And, I'm a proponent of, like, hey, have a thing that you like outside of your job and something that you're interested in, and pursue it in some different ways over time, right? And so I think that this is one of those. I think it was an early, or one of the few times in my life I've prioritized something over work, which is a step for me, I think a positive step in the right direction. So from that standpoint, it'll totally be worth it. Because I know in a couple weeks, too, like, I just went 1 week without flying, and it was fucking amazing, and, like, it just felt so relaxed, like, and I was also not working and not doing anything. I mean, I still have to do, like, 4 10-hour days this week, which sucks, but I'm cool with it. But, you know, like, just to not have to travel and, like, spend the entire day traveling. So to not have that on my plate for a week was great. And so to not have that on my plate for a month will probably be even greater.
I met some very cool people.
And some really talented people who wrote some really awesome shit. And the group is going to continue, so they're going to keep meeting through April. Then they're taking May and June off because Chuck's new book is out, and so he's going to be busy as hell. And then they're supposedly going to reconvene in July. So I was like, well, if I'm here in July, you know, sign me up. I'll be back. Dun, 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 dun. Bwah, bwah. I can't really remember the Terminator theme. Dun, 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 dun. There you go. There you go. It's a pretty good theme song. So that's good too, because I mean, that's a potential, hey, you know, maybe somewhere down the road, I'll have a group, a writing group. That would be nice. And a writing group that I think is good and talented and, like, helpful, which I like a lot.
Um,
Lydia won't be doing the group anymore, but she'll be replaced by Susie Vitello, who's seems like a good teacher too. So, was it worth it, like, in terms of what I learned? I mean, I've learned a lot. I think that, like, I learned more from watching the fuck-ups other people made than, you know, from doing it myself. And also watched how someone handled the classroom. It was kind of interesting. One of the days, Chuck was sort of talking about how Tom's class worked and how his classes work and why they work ways that other classes don't. So someone in the class had gone to one of Susie's intensives, and he was like, so there's this kind of difference, because Chuck is in a group of all women writers. And so he was saying, you know, someone was asking him about that, just kind of like how that came to be, or like what was the intent level or whatever, or like the purpose. And he was kind of like, well, you know, like men in writing groups want to have like an alpha figure to look to and to kind of take control of things and take charge of things. And women tend to be more like egalitarian. And then, you know, the person who was in this other class was sort of expressing that because he was kind of frustrated because he felt like a lot of the time was just sort of chatting and sharing and not really working on writing stuff the way he wanted it to be. I mean, it was an intensive like 2 or 3 day class that he paid for. Like, he paid good money and took time out of his life. So I think that I think that's true. I mean, I think that maybe, I don't know if it's a man woman thing, but let's just say it is. And it would make sense, because it would make sense why, like, you know, a lot of writing groups and classes and stuff are composed of women. And maybe it's because they're comfortable with that. And so then when like a Chuck does one, there does tend to be a lot more dudes in there. And so I don't know. I just think that's like, it makes sense to me because of a difference in preference that there would be that difference. But I think there is kind of a need for some of that. Like, some of what I watched, you know, I was watching it thinking about it, like, if I were teaching the class, what would I like to do here? What would I replicate, or what would I do differently? And I will say, like, you know, I appreciated, for example, early on in class, Chuck was like, you know, the only way this really works is if everyone critiques, they talk about the other person's piece, and they say what they want to say about it, and then they're done. And they don't talk again. And, you know, and, like, let's not do the crosstalk where you're talking about what she said and, you know, he's talking about what you said. Let's all say what we're going to say about the piece and then move on. And it was sort of like a good moment, I think, because I think it really redirected the class and saved the class, probably, because we were just getting real caught up in some shit that I was like, you know, it was very small and petty and like, it didn't matter. I hit this realization of, you know what, it doesn't really matter what I think of what this guy thinks. You know what I mean? What matters is, when I read the story, this is what I got out of it. So I think I got that out of it. I think I got some ideas about leadership in a workshop. And I do think it's kind of how I feel about book clubs. Like, I've run a few book clubs in the library. And I found the only way to sort of do it is you have to be a little bit of a dictator. By which I mean a penis potato. And you have to sort of pick the books. I had way more success picking books, and this goes across the board. This is like middle school and up. If I just picked the book and was like, this is what we're reading, it usually works. And they usually, you know, enjoy it or not. But then I think they don't feel bad telling the library guy, like, eh, this wasn't so great. Or they don't feel as bad about showing up if they haven't read the book or whatever. Whereas when they pick their own books, I think they feel like a pressure, you know, to be like, ah, this is Sharon's book and I hated it, but I like Sharon. So, you know, I don't want to just show up and say it was shitty. Or maybe Sharon is a sensitive individual and is like, you know, them not liking this book hurts my feelings because I picked it. Anyway, there's like a lot of politics like that going on. And I think if somebody sort of takes the lead and is like, okay, here's this and da-da-da-da, it really helps. I mean, I think it also just really, really helps to have someone in the group who the group members respect as like a professional. So in other words, somebody, you know, like a Chuck or a Lydia who, when they give their advice, you're like, well, yeah, this isn't just some other person who's also, you know, I saw what you wrote. It wasn't so great. But like when you have teachers like them and you're like, well, I think most of us came to the class because what you did, we found great. So there you go.
I think that does help. I think that helps keep things...
keep things tidier. I'll say this, and like, I don't know how to put it exactly, because it's not like it wasn't like a revelation for me, but it was something I kind of knew, but I don't know if I knew how strongly I do now. Which is like, when you bring your piece to be critiqued, you bring it, you read it, you listen to what people have to say. And the only things you should ask are if they make a critique and you don't understand, like, the thing they say, you don't actually understand what they're talking about. Like, when you receive feedback, you shouldn't say something like, okay, we'd have a lot of fights like this. Someone would say, you know, you've got this significant female character and she's not described at all. And then someone would say, she was. She was like, you know, it said she was short and brunette in the first paragraph of, you know, the 10 pages. And it's like, okay, well, you know, and then the person has to sort of say, okay, well, I guess you did it. But what they're not doing is hearing the critique. And the critique is, I couldn't see this person. It wasn't enough. Maybe you did describe them. Maybe you checked the box, but you didn't describe them in a way that made them real. You know, you didn't do the job of writer, which is to make me see this person if that's a necessary thing in this story. You know, or basically being defensive about anything that you wrote in that sort of sense is, I think, a bad idea. Like, I think it's just a bad idea to sort of say that. I'll give you an example. There's a guy who read a story, and there was a part of it that was about, you know, this person had a box that she was filling with money that she kept under the bed. And so then the money gets stolen and, you know, whatever. And it was kind of problematic because the money didn't really mean anything significant. It was just kind of a nest egg, but for no real purpose. It was like, I don't know, maybe I'll go back to community college and take some classes, and right now I'm just paying rent and whatever. So, you know, the money goes away and you're like, eh, easy come, easy go. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like much. But someone was like, hey, why would you just have money in a box? Like, why would you have money in a box under the bed? And the guy who read the story was like, that's, you know, the circle of friends I travel in, that's how they do it. Like, they don't trust the bank. And he was like, I don't know if I buy that. And this guy's like, I'm telling you, like, everyone I know, like, myself included, has, like, a box of money that they hide somewhere. And, you know, it was like, yeah, but I mean, like, $10,000? Or are we talking, like, $250 in cash, you know? That's just, like, a rainy day, who knows? Because that's one thing. But I have, like, $5,000 in cash. I mean, the guy was like, listen, your character's not like a grandma who lived through the Depression who doesn't trust the bank. I mean, I think everyone I know uses a bank at this point. Like, no one I know doesn't use a bank. And this guy's like, I'm telling you, it's like this and blah, blah, blah. And I think that the thing is, what people need to listen to is not... it doesn't really help, because when someone reads your story, if they have a problem with something like, why wouldn't you just put the money in the bank? And, you know, this person was also offering solutions, is like, you could give me some reasons they don't want to put money in the bank. You know, maybe they got, like, maybe they owe the IRS money and they were having their wages garnished, and so they're trying to pretend like they're not working right now. Or, like, maybe they have just horrible credit, or, you know, maybe they had some kind of banking disaster. Maybe they worked at the bank and they don't, you know, they're like, I know who works there. Fuck that. You know what I mean? Like, any toss-off thing you could do to sort of explain it. And he's just like, I just think it kind of warrants explanation because when there's just a box of money floating around, I just immediately assume it's going to get stolen. And you kind of don't feel as bad for the person when it gets stolen, too, because you're like, well, yeah, moron, why would you have your entire life savings under the bed? You know what I mean? You're like, that's a stupid thing to do. It's a profoundly dumb thing to do, and then you find out exactly why, and it's like, and it kind of gets to the whole point of it, which is like, we have this money, and we do it this way because we don't trust the bank, and I'm like, you trust your, like, a-hole roommate who you don't really know that well more than you trust the bank. I mean, come on. But anyway, it gets to the whole point, which is like, when people are asking these questions, these sort of niggling plot questions, what you gotta understand is, like, you got a room full of people who are reading your story, and if more than one person is, like, confused by something, then probably a lot of people who read your story are gonna be confused. Like, probably a lot of the people who look at your story are gonna be like, I don't understand this. And they aren't gonna care. And, like, this is the biggest, I think, thing that I learned or that has sort of been cemented into my brain is a lot of people would say some version of this, which is, you know, if I'm imagining a reader goes into Powell's and, like, picks up your book and looks and, like, just starts reading the first two pages of this story, like, they're not gonna stick with it. They're not going to, like, read something that they're super confused by and then be like, I should reread that again and figure it out, puzzle it out. Because what they're going to do is say, you know what, I'm going to just pick up this other book that also says a lot of interesting things in a lot of interesting ways that I understand. Like, I understand what's happening. I understand where the people are in space. I understand what this book is trying to do. And so I think that just, like, really resonated with me in terms of, like, when you talk about working on fiction and you're talking about, like, what's the purpose of what you're doing? I mean, when you're in a workshop like that, the purpose, I think, is to make something that's marketable. And I don't necessarily mean, like, capital M marketable, like action figures and movies and shit. I just mean something that there's a reader for. And I think the only reader for super complex, overly complex, let's call them, sort of social experimenting almost in stories and books, I think the only place for those is, like, writing workshops. I mean, I think the only place you're going to get someone to read that is a writing workshop. And I liked that this workshop was conscious of that and was sort of like, here's the thing. If you bring something to a workshop and someone makes a critique about not being able to understand it, or, okay, I'll give you another concrete example. In the same story, the writer used sort of what they were calling gender ambiguous names, but they really weren't. They're like, we're using girls' names for boys and boys' names for girls. You know, Stevie is a girl. Ashley is a boy. And they're like five characters, and they're all sort of like that, right? And so somebody's just like, look, I'm just confused by this. Like, I think it's confusing. And the writer was like, yeah, I kind of wanted to, like, do that to sort of mess with people's heads as far as, like, you know, what gender means or something like that. And this guy was just like, well, listen, I think I would get it. I could put it together if I charted it out and whatever. But, like, if I pick up this story and read it and I can't, there's nothing that ties one person to who's who. Like, I can't tie a person to a trait or an action or anything. I'm just going to put it back down. Like, I don't care that much. That's the whole thing. If you don't care. And I think it's the writer's job to make you care. And it's the writer's job to make you sort of pick something up and to make you say, I do want to read more of this. Like, I am curious where this is going. I want to take this ride. I'm interested enough to take the rest of this ride, to invest some of my time in it. And I feel like this person has piqued my interest enough that I will, you know, forego some of my time, some of my life, to see what they've done on the page here. So I think that's, like, the big thing that I got out of this, and, like, the big was it worth it question is kind of, like, yeah, because I think that I do like thinking that way of, like, how do you know if something's worth telling, basically? And, like, what makes this worth doing? And I do think it's, like, yeah, I think we've got to... Well, I think at some point a lot of us graduate to the point where we're like, you know, I want to write things that I really like, but also that are other people like. I think this is kind of like a young man's game, is like writing fiction that's super confusing and super artsy, and like trying to accomplish these other sort of meta-narrative things, but that no one's really going to get. And no one's going to really understand. And, like, the only way you'd make that happen, it's almost like sometimes people, like, I did this too. Like, you're young and you write a story and you're almost imagining yourself 25 years in the future explaining in an interview, like, oh, yeah, well, what I did was this clever thing and da-da-da-da. And, you know, and then everyone's like, oh, well, everyone loved it, you know, and the people who got it loved it. But the reality is, like, no one's gonna get it because no one's gonna read it. Like, nobody's gonna do that. And I don't think that's, like, such a bad thing. Because I think on the one hand, attention spans are very short in a way. I think the mistake is we say attention spans are short. And I don't think that's true. I think that it's, like, people have found ways to pack a lot of pleasure and enjoyment into a very small space. And so your thing has to be worth that. Your thing has to live up to that now, as opposed to, you know, if you're going to write a book, a novel, your novel has to be more interesting than BuzzFeed today. Whereas before it only had to be more interesting than other novels. So, like, books are in a competition, you know, books are in competition with TV in a way that they probably weren't before, you know, because TV was like, okay, but it's like, 22 minutes, everything's wrapped up, da-da-da-da, like, it's only going to be so good. The highs are high, but the lows are low, and the mediocres are plentiful. But now you have more to compete with. I think that's the thing. And even within books, you have more to compete with because it's so, you know, books are so accessible now. Like, when I was a kid, I read a bunch of books. Like, I think I read The Bell Jar in, like, sixth grade or something, just because my mom had it on the bookshelf. And I was just like, I'll read this. I've heard it's depressing. And I just read it kind of because it was there. And so that's going to go away because there's not as much of a because it's there anymore, because everything is there. You know, there's so much content just around now that there's no point at which it's like, because it's there. I don't think that's going to be a thing forever. And may not even be a thing now. So you just got to be like, you got to be mindful of that. And I also think, like, I think people can have long attention spans and long-term attention, and they do get really absorbed in things. I mean, we say how people have short attention spans, but, like, movies have gotten long as fuck. You go to a Marvel movie, and it's, like, 2 hours and 45 minutes. I mean, that is, like, crazy long. I think I remember seeing, like, Gladiator, and it's, like, something like 3 hours long, and just thinking, like, Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, I'm enjoying this, but it is really long. And you leave the theater and you're like, what fucking time is it? Like 2 a.m? But now that's like a common thing. You go to Lord of the Rings. I went to like the second or third one at midnight, which was dumb as shit. and it was like, oh, no one's here at midnight. That's cool. And then I was like, oh, probably because everyone was like, idiot, you're not going to get to bed till 4 in the fucking morning if you go do this. Like, you should go to this at noon so then you can get to bed a little late. But now that's like a common thing. So I don't know. I don't know if it's that attention spans are short. I don't know if that's the problem. I think it's that, like, we've found ways to be rewarded for things that don't require a long attention span. And so, like, I think we're more choosy about what we're going to spend our more concentrated bouts of attention on. That's what I think. I think we're just, like, more selective about, like, hey, if this is going to be a 6-hour investment, it better be worth my time. So I don't know. But I mean, I think that it's like, you just got to have this sort of healthy version of like, well, okay, here's what's marketable, but here's... I don't like to think of it as marketable, because that's not what I like. Because marketing to me is dumb. Marketing is like, well, they can pitch it really easily in 15 seconds or something. And I'm like, well, I don't need that. I mean, what I need is like, if someone were to pick it up and read 4 or 5 pages, they'd probably want to read more. You know, if the right sort of person, if the sort of person that is inclined to like your work picks it up and reads 4 or 5 pages, they'd probably read more. And that's like, I think, the version of marketable that I would talk about as a teacher, or if I was giving someone advice on writing, I'd be like, don't write to sell because that's dumb. But write something, your intent should be like, if the right person comes into the bookstore, picks up my book and reads the first 3 pages, they'll buy it, or they'll want to buy it, or it'll stick with them and they'll check it out at the library later or whatever. Like, basically you just want your writing to turn people on to your further writing. I think that's the key. And really the only thing there is to it. I mean, I think that's what marketable writing is to me. It's like writing that makes me want to read more of your writing. So I don't know. I think that like that sort of way of thinking is new to me. I mean, thinking about, I think it, and it comes in, you know, when you think of something as being finished, and then you think about like, if I picked this up and read like 2 or 3 pages, would I be like, yeah, all right, I'll do that? Or would you be like, ugh, God, you know what I mean? All right, fuckface. No? No. This guy is not going to let me in because he's a fuckface bald fuck. I have discovered that it's totally acceptable to make fun of dudes for being bald, by the way. Bald is the new fat. It's like, I think it's a Donald Trump thing, to be honest. Because, like, it's definitely okay to make fun of that dude's baldness. And, like, I saw, you know, it was like an OKCupid commercial or something. Or, no, it was a commercial for, like, insurance or some shit, but someone was, like, on an OKCupid-type date, and they were looking at the profile pic, and then the phone goes down, and you see the actual guy sitting across from her, and he's got, like, clearly what's a wig, and she's like, oh, your hair looks really good or something, and you know, then something happens and his wig falls off and you're just like, ha 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 ha. But then you're like, you know, I think that probably is a thing. Like, I think probably bald dudes don't get a lot of love. And by the way, when I'm talking about bald dudes, I'm not talking about the super jacked guy who looks like a biker who's bald and has like a handlebar mustache. Because I'm like, I'm sure that guy's doing fine. I'm talking about, like, your George Costanzas, your Larry Davids. Like, where they don't look tough bald. They just look bald when they're bald. Yeah. So anyway, if anyone's looking for what you can still make fun of, dudes being bald is definitely one of them. Dudes being bald is an option, if you're interested. If anyone's interested in that. My mom was asking for slogans. I don't know why she included me on this text, because I don't know what she expected. Because she didn't like mine, even though I thought some of them were pretty good. But she was asking me for lines for... She wanted to make a poster for March for Our Lives? Is that the one where it's like, let's march about gun violence in schools or something? And, you know, I sent her some... I thought some pretty good ones, like, you know, something like school kids should be eating mystery meat, not turned into it by guns. And there was one that I was like, you know, it was like reading, writing, arithmetic or something. And then like the only, how did it go? The only kind of math that guns can teach is subtraction or something like that. And I was like, oh, see, that's good. That's good. I don't know. Just a bunch of shit like that. I don't know what she eventually, she texted three of hers and they were like, fine. But I was just like, I don't know. I always wanted to, if I went to a protest, I always thought it'd be kind of funny to have the poster that went too far. That people were like, oh, God. Or, like, that's a little distasteful. Still making the point, but, like, okay. The example I'm thinking of is Kevin Smith. So his movie Dogma was all about the Catholic Church and Catholicism and shit. And so there were some protests around it. And he joined the protests because no one really knew who he was. Especially the protesters didn't be like, that's Kevin Smith. So he would, like, make signs and go into them. And one of the signs he said he made said, dogma is dog shit. And, like, he's, like, quite a few people at the protests were kind of like, you know, we appreciate your enthusiasm, but it's kind of like going a little too far, or, like, it's a little crude for our purposes here. And he would just sort of politely be like, what do you mean? You know what I mean? Kind of laughing the whole time inside. I just think that's, like, the funniest thing. I think that's, like, the funniest way to fuck with a protest a little bit is to just be, like, you know, say something horrible about kids getting shot, but you're like, yeah, I'm making the same point as you. Sorry, you don't feel as strongly about it as I do. Ah! I mean, it's sort of... I don't know. I feel like I can talk about this on some level, and I'm going to, because... I have a very distinct memory of Columbine happening, which was, like, you know, the big one. And, like, I was in school when it happened, and, like, we watched part of it on TV. And then our asshole history teacher, Mr. Gonzalez, like, rolled the TV away and was like, let's talk about Rasputin. And we did that, and I was like, you know, history is happening right now. And... I could see the decision as an adult to be like, we're not going to watch this. But I don't think you can not watch it and just continue on with history that doesn't matter. When everyone's kind of like, what the fuck is going on? Right? But anyway, I remember, like, being freaked out and thinking, like, how weird it was. And I was just like, I don't want to die at school. I mean, I hated school. Dying at school would have been like, you know, what it is for someone who hates their job to die at their desk, where it's just like, oh, God, no, like, I'll use my last ounce of strength to pull myself out into the shipping bay or something just so I don't die face down in a pile of paperwork. It was weird. And, like, you know, the next day a bunch of people stayed home from school because it was like, I don't know, because the parents and stuff were just didn't know what the fuck to do. Obviously. And then, like, everyone was like, oh, are there going to be more killings? And, like, what's going to happen? And we did a bunch of shit in my school. Like, we had to have passes, you know, IDs, like picture IDs, which is, like, new. That was a new thing in our school. You had to have this ID. And it had to be on you, like, on a lanyard at all times. Which I was like, dudes. You know, the guys who shot up the school were students here, right? And, like, would have these lanyards, and this would, You could have instituted this policy at Columbine, and it would have been exactly the same. Like, it would have been the same. There would be no difference. It was a real helpless feeling because you're like, I'm a kid in school, and like, I guess somebody could just decide to bring a gun and like blow everyone away, and there's not really a lot you could do about it. But I mean, I've continued that life in as much as like, you know, there was the library in New Mexico, and it's like, yeah, I mean, anyone can just walk in there with a gun too. Like, there's nothing preventing someone from driving up with a duffel bag full of guns, coming in with that duffel bag, whipping their guns out and blowing everyone away. Like, there is no security measure to prevent that whatsoever. And I guess I just feel, though, like, I'm not against gun control by any stretch of the imagination, but I also don't think it's the answer. Like, I don't, because I think gun control is like a losing battle, or like, not a losing battle. It's a winning battle, but it's going to take forever. And, you know, increased gun control isn't going to mean no guns. It's just going to mean like they don't have a machine gun, you know, when they should just have like a rifle or something. So it's like, oh, well, so this kid only had 3 pistols with 6 shots apiece. I mean, wow, you know, I'm saved. So like, while I am certainly not a opponent of gun control, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know, we could try it, like, see what happens. But I also think that we're spending a lot of time like fighting gun control and fighting the NRA and stuff, when it's like, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, this last one in Florida, it was like the kid, there were like multiple red flags and like specific warnings sent to people that no one followed up on and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, that to me is a big fucking deal. And like, I think we should be talking about that. Like, I think we should be talking about, you know, like, it's like James Holmes, the guy who shot up the movie theater with the Dark Knight thing. And it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, there's no part of me that thinks he was not crazy. I mean, I think he did not. I think they made an insanity plea and it didn't fly, which I'm like, how do you get an insanity plea then? I mean, do you just have to basically have no concept of reality? Because it seems like walking into a movie theater and shooting it up is like the definition to me of a crazy thing to do. Like a weird, crazy thing to just shoot up a theater full of people that you don't even fucking know. Like, I get, if you were walking into some place where you knew the people, you know what I mean? You go to a party where you know everybody and shot everyone up. Or, like, even as awful as it is, like, you know, these kids shooting up their school, it's kind of like, I mean, there's a lot of, like, weird emotional shit going on in these high schools, right? Like, I don't agree with it, but I sort of have an idea where it came from. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the difference between I'm mad at everyone in my life and so I'm going to shoot them versus I am mad at everyone in my life and I'm going to walk into a bowling alley and just shoot everyone there, having never been to this bowling alley before. You know what I mean? Not really identifying with this as a place in any big way. It's a weirder thing to do, I think. So anyway, I don't know. I just wonder if the answer is somewhere else. I mean, I think there's a lot of like mental health questions that need to be answered. And I don't know. Like, we've had attacks too of stabbings and like people. There was like a little while there where it seemed like everybody was just like renting a truck and then running over a bunch of people on a bridge or something. You know what I mean? Or like smashing it into a cafe or something like that. And you're like, yeah, that's pretty fucked up. You know, so I don't know. I mean, you know, good for everybody. Bless everybody trying to do the right thing. I just don't know if that's the rightest thing, I guess. But it potentially is. I mean, God knows I've been wrong before. I don't mean to get crazy, but I've been wrong before. I had a funny story that Chuck told. I mean, that not a funny story, but yet another confirming story for how I feel about, like, news and media right now, which is, so Chuck's new novel comes out in May, and someone asked a question about, I can't remember, about, like, mining for material and whatever, and, you know, Chuck and Lydia were both like, I mean, we both use our real lives, like, a lot. And so Lydia was like, I'm a big proponent of the sort of safe version of, you know, the experiment/research mission. So, like, if you're going to write about, you know, this, maybe try it. Or, you know, try a version of it that's, like, acceptable, that's not going to ruin your life. But, you know, do something. I mean, if you're going to, like, let's say you're going to write a Fight Club, you know, make some soap. Join a boxing club, you know what I mean? Like, find out about underground fighting shit. Just do some of this stuff and sort of see what it's like. Go to AA meetings, you know, and find out what that's like. And one thing Chuck was talking about is he's like, I spent probably, I think he said like 3 months talking to a lot of like alt-right people. Because that's, I guess, part of what his new book is about. Is like this, you know, he's like this weird subculture, which was kind of cool because I was like, yeah, I mean, you don't see a lot of, well, it'll be interesting to see because I don't really know what it's about, you know what I mean? But it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But anyway, he spent like a lot of time with a lot of, he's like, I spent a lot of time with a lot of individuals who are heavily involved in the alt-right movement. And he's like, there was, you know, a guy I talked to for a long time. Like, I interviewed him in a tattoo shop. And there was a bunch of flash up behind, you know, different tattoo art. And one of the pieces of art was a swastika, which I didn't realize that was up there because it's just like a whole wall of stuff. And he's like, you know, I interviewed this guy for, like, the entire day. Like, we chatted for a really long time and... Then afterwards, he's like, can we take a picture together? And I said, sure. So he was like, so I put him in, you know, like I was doing touring for Fight Club 2. So a lot of the pictures I took was like, I would put people in headlocks and stuff like that. So I put this guy in a headlock and someone took the picture and, you know, put it up on Instagram or whatever. And he's like, and then the next day, it's like, I had to do all this damage control because Daily Beast found this picture and, you know, like, circles this swastika and is like, Chuck Palahniuk is a Nazi. You know, and I was just like, oh, of course. And that's like what these things do, I think, is just sort of be like, well, yeah, if you were in the presence of a Nazi, if you were in the presence of a swastika and you weren't like burning down the house, then whatever. Chuck was talking about this yesterday a little bit about like, you know, morality and stuff and how so much of what people want is for, like, morality to be really prescribed at the end of a book or a story or something like that. But how he just thinks it's much better to leave it open and sort of have it be up for interpretation. And, like, the debate of the thing keeps the thing alive more than the thing itself does. So, in other words, when people are talking about Fight Club and arguing about it, that keeps it in the culture more than it, the narrative itself is like the argument about what does it mean. I thought that was really true and just thought it was like an interesting look at like ambiguous moral stances, you know what I mean? Which I'm a believer in right now. But, you know, there you go. So that's this show's morally ambiguous stance. What do we think about the issues? I don't know. There you go. All right. Well, I'm here. I'm home. Well, I'm at the gym. Where I'm going to take my fucking wallet in because they'll probably actually make me pay this time, fuckers. But it's been a long journey. Thanks for sticking it out with me. I think these episodes are scheduled like up through June. So I wouldn't have to make a new episode in theory until like the beginning of June. But I think I'm going to try and just keep it going and, you know, it'll slowly catch up. I was ahead at one time before a couple months, and it caught up rather quickly. You'd be surprised. I mean, if you only do it every other week, then it catches up in, you know, a couple months, and then you're like, oh, I'm out of stuff. I guess the other option would be releasing more than one a week, but I don't think anyone really wants that. And does it really matter? I mean, does it matter that this is asynchronous to my real life? I don't think it does, and I'm the one doing it, but, you know, what the fuck do I know? It's just my show. All right, lovelies. Long drive complete. Long flights complete. Long day's journey into night complete. And see you next time.